The helicopter in his front yard had refreshed Rodney's horror. He had to maneuver his car around its grotesque bulk just to reach his driveway, and then he'd spent the kilometer down the main road suppressing yet another panic attack. The safe and here had sunk in, hit bottom. Now Rodney had to contend with concepts like Shepherd was dangerous. Shepherd's motives were unknown. Shepherd was intelligent and engaging. Okay, that was an old lesson. He just needed a refresher course. But the chapter where Shepherd was attractive enough to make Rodney fall a tiny bit in love with him, more than the fraction he already was, that was new. New and distressing as fuck. So, left or right? Rodney's hands redoubled their grip on the steering wheel, but his foot didn't lift off the brake. One direction for town, one direction for the highway. He could still flee the country, except he hadn't packed any of his things, didn't have his passport, just the clothes on his back, and $20 in his wallet. He had nothing of value he could trade on the Russian black market, except for his body or his brain. Oh, who is he kidding on the body part? The lack of options made his indecision all the more troubling. He wasn't accustomed to either. Then again, he'd never been so far out of his league in his entire life. What would Shepherd do if Rodney just didn't return? After that stint in the woods, it wouldn't be surprising if the guy had developed abandonment issues. How long would he hang around waiting? A day? More? Would he still sleep in Rodney's bed? Would he poke through Rodney's things, piecing together a clearer picture of a man he barely knew? He could be doing that right now. He could be trolling through Rodney's underwear drawer or snickering at the impending expiration date on the unopened box of condoms in Rodney's nightstand. Oh God. Only the world's largest idiot would leave John Shepherd alone in his house. Turning around wasn't fast enough. Rodney seriously considered backing up his driveway until he remembered that backing was only easy when there weren't obstacles to avoid, like hundreds of trees, and his driveway was about as straight as Elton John. Not to mention, Shepherd would probably want to know why he'd returned early without any supplies. And Rodney could hardly explain that he'd been worried about Shepherd unearthing his stash of Belle Ami videos. Shepherd might be asleep for a while, might wake and not remember how long Rodney had been gone. He definitely wouldn't know how long a trip to town would take. He might be cautious and keep his snooping to a minimum, but the next time Rodney left him alone... Okay, so there couldn't be a next time. This was no longer risk management. It was damage control. Shunning the turn signal, Rodney yanked the steering wheel to the right and stomped on the gas. Driving haphazardly, one hand on the wheel and only one eye on the road, he groped his cell phone out of his pocket and punched up Zelenka's number. After a few rings, Radek's Fox Pleasant voice answered. "Rodney, to what miracle do I owe the pleasure of this call?" "Fuck off," Rodney gritted, dodging a signpost that had no business being so close to the shoulder of the road. "This is officially an emergency, and I need your help."
"You need my help, and I'm sorry, what did you just ask me to do?"
"Are you deaf or something? I said..." "Wait, scratch that." Radek snorted. "You really are losing your form, you realize. First you call at a normal time without managing to interrupt me in any way. Then, well, for anyone else, I would say you are being rude. But for you, that was nearly civil."
"I'm serious," Rodney begged.
"Then apologize."
"What? What for?"
"Oh, right. I'm sorry I told you to fuck off. Now, if you're done being butthurt,
Maybe we can focus on my emergency.
Maybe I'm not done, Radek replied primly. Maybe this isn't about fuck off. Maybe I'm still annoyed from the last time I spoke to you, when you pulled that stunt with Steve.
That wasn't a stunt. I actually was in danger of sleeping with him, but just...
The words jammed. Couldn't be ejected fast enough.
Forget Steve. Shepherd, this is about Shepherd.
The pause said he more than had Zelenka's attention.
The crazy man from the woods? I thought he was imaginary.
Not crazy, Rodney whimpered.
Imaginary, I wish. My imagination didn't come close, and I must have wasted entire afternoons wondering what he looked like. There are things I totally didn't expect. I mean, lanky's generally not my type, and there's no way that hair spent any significant time under a helmet.
Hair? What?
Yeah, you know.
With one hand snapping rapidly and the other pressing his phone to his ear, that left no hands to steer the car out of oncoming traffic. Thankfully, there wasn't any.
I'm sure you've dated someone who was fussy about their hair, always teasing it and putting tons of crap in it, and you're not allowed to touch it because you'll mess it up.
Well...
And then you take them in the bedroom for a round of hot, nasty sex, and the next thing you know, it's all matted with sweat and sticking up in inappropriate spots?
Radek considered. Okay, yes, I do know what you're talking about.
Yes, like that. Nobody should look like that all the time.
Like he just rolled off somebody's pillow. Somebody else's pillow. Because nothing, even remotely, like John Shepherd, had ever been in Rodney's bed. At least, not concurrent with Rodney. But tonight, Shepherd wanted to.
Oh, God.
Rodney, you're speaking nonsense, Zelenka warned him. What does your emergency have to do with amazing sex hair? Rodney blew out a sigh that was embarrassingly close to a whine.
I told you, Shepherd!
Is the emergency, or has amazing sex hair?
Oh, God. The only way Rodney knew Zelenka wasn't doing it on purpose was the absence of hysterical laughter. Zelenka never had been good at holding that sort of thing inside.
Yes, and yes! Rodney snapped, slowing to just under the speed limit to roll through a stop sign on the outskirts of town. Zelenka processed in silence for a moment. Then,
wait, how do you know what this shepherd looks like?
I was beginning to wonder when you traded in your brain for a bowl of lukewarm tapioca. Shepherd turned up on my doorstep this morning.
Radek was impressed enough to hum a few words and check.
I know you are not accustomed to visitors living where you do. How did you know it was him?
He introduced himself, Rodney defended, realizing that Shepherd had done nothing of the sort.
And you believed him. Zelenka clearly disproved, which was only rational.
Hell, Rodney disproved, just not enough to stop himself.
He has a peculiar way of saying, that is, I recognize his voice.
Rodney's favorite parking space wasn't available, but the one he took was closer to the grocery store, which suited him just fine. He dropped the car into park, flung open the door, and attempted to decapitate himself on the safety belt he'd forgotten to unbuckle.
How, fuck, how?
I hear choking. Are you all right?
Fine, Rodney wheezed, stumbling to the sidewalk.
Little equipment failure. I'm good.
Zelenka sounded skeptical.
Is something on fire? What is with you and fire? Did you never wonder, Rodney, why the labs in which you were scheduled to work came equipped with extra fire extinguishers? No, he snorted. Now that you mentioned it. Oh, not relevant. Totally not relevant. He might have continued shouting, except the clerk behind the counter at the grocery store had a reputation for gossip, and she fixed Rodney with a hungry stare the minute he'd burst through the door. He dropped his tone, hissing, "Can we please reminisce later? You know, sometime when Shepherd isn't alone in my house going through all my stuff?" You let him. Now, whose brain has been traded for porridge, eh? I didn't think about it until it was too late. You should not have let him inside in the first place. Even if he is what he claims to be, you have no proof outside of his word. Rodney was halfway down the first aisle when it occurred to him that 2 weeks' worth of supplies would never fit in his arms, especially not when one arm was holding a phone to his head. He'd be damned before he got one of those cordless earpieces. People who used them in public looked like they were crazy, wandering around talking to themselves. He backtracked, snagged a shopping cart. This guy's legit, Radek. He landed a helicopter, a military helicopter, with guns, in my front yard. Scared the shit out of me. I don't know why he came or what he wants. He hasn't tried to shoot me. He's had ample opportunity. I think he plans to stay a while, and since I already made the mistake of leaving him alone, I need to make sure that I stock up on everything I could conceivably need for the next 2 weeks, so that I don't have to make additional trips to town. That's where you come in. Oh, shit. Here came the laughter. A shopping list. You need me to make a shopping list. That's it, isn't it? Rodney couldn't spare the time to deny it. Yes, he growled. The essentials. The extras? I need it all, so start listing, and for God's sake, don't forget anything. There was typing in the background. Always a positive sign. Coffee, Radek suggested. Got it. It was safe to calculate his normal intake and just double it, right? There was no way Shepherd consumed as much coffee as Rodney did, right? Milk, eggs, butter. Good, great, keep 'em coming. Beer, toilet tissue, aspirin. Oh, good call. It was a small store, not one of those megamarts like a larger city could support. Still, pushing the cart quickly grew cumbersome, with Zelenka's list forcing Rodney to backtrack every few items. He abandoned the cart at the end of an aisle and started making strategic strikes on foot. Condoms? Zelenka snickered. Rodney fumbled his phone, almost caught it, then ended up chasing it as it skittered across the floor. At least the call was still connected when he shoved it back against his ear. The man is American military, and you are an asshole who obviously wants to see his best friend sent to prison, and I promise you I will seek revenge for this betrayal. Bread, toothpaste, laundry detergent. Damn it! Slow down! Those things are on opposite sides of the store. Well then, you better hustle. Every minute you waste here is a minute Shepherd could be making humiliating discoveries in your CD collection. Didn't Jeannie give you the Celine Dion Greatest Hits album for your birthday? It had been in retribution for forgetting her birthday the same year. Fuck. Rodney jogged a few steps, then broke into a run. Rodney had this thing about pears. and it extended to his shopping. Maybe he never liked to see solidary food items looking lonely in his cart, or maybe it was the techie in him craving redundancy. Whatever it was, it made buying for two seem less unnatural than it ought to. It also saved him from being asked awkward questions at the checkout, because the clerk was nosy enough to already know about his strange habit. One thing Rodney hadn't anticipated was the sheer volume, which compromised 2 weeks worth of staples times two. His cart groaned under the weight and insisted on getting hung up on every crack in the sidewalk on the trip back to the car. Between the running and the bending and the lifting, Rodney's back was beginning to complain as well. He wasn't looking forward to loading and unloading his car. Damn it, he helped Shepard carry stuff from the helicopter. Rodney had better damned well have help getting the groceries inside. Therefore, he wasn't inclined to refuse when a helping hand lifted two of the heavier bags for him and deposited them in the back of the wagon with the growing pile. The hand belonged to a plaid flannel arm. The arm belonged to Steve. "Hey, Dr. McKay, let me help you with those," he offered. "Just great." Trust the man to disappear when Rodney wanted a self-destructive pity fuck, then turn up again after Rodney had regained his senses and wanted nothing. "Whoa, wait. Steve, that would be nice. Thanks." Rodney stumbled aside to give him room to work, cautious, as always, to keep his backside out of harm's way. Steve positively beamed at him as he shifted the mountain of groceries. Rodney had the oddest urge to tip him. "This is a lot," he observed. Well, for Steve, it counted as an observation. For anyone else, it would have been a statement of the excruciatingly obvious. "You stocking up or something?" "Or something," Rodney evaded. Come to think of it, it hadn't taken Steve long to find him, almost as if Steve had been lurking by his car, like he'd seen Rodney roll into town and tracked him as far as this block of shops. He'd probably decided to wait for Rodney to exit rather than check them one at a time and risk missing him. Rodney tested his suspicion. "Thanks for the help, but isn't it close to lunchtime? I hope I'm not interrupting." "Nah, I just finished." Steve's gaze darted in the direction of the bar, and he licked his lips. Bingo! Guilty son of a bitch had probably abandoned his window booth as soon as he spotted Rodney's car. In fact, Rodney would bet good money that Steve's lunch was at this very minute growing cold. "Oh, then I suppose there's no hurry." "Serves you right for lying. I hope you've got a beer getting warm, too." Steve hid his dismay passably well. "Nope, none. Say, did you notice the helicopter this morning? It flew right over town. Looked like it was kind of headed in your direction. I know you're interested in strange stuff, and I don't know if that counts as strange, but I figured I'd mention it anyways, just in case." Just in case what? Just in case Rodney hadn't noticed the damn thing land in his front yard? Thanks. After Steve finished with the groceries, he insisted on closing the wagon's tailgate. Then he didn't move, just sort of hooked there next to the bumper. And it took Rodney a moment to realize that the position was intentional. He was trapped between two cars, with Steve cutting off his forward exit. Oh, sure, he could always retreat out the rear, but the second he turned around, he'd be lucky if Steve's eyes were the only things all over his ass. So Rodney tried to stare him down, willing Steve to stagger back under the sheer malevolence of his glare. It might have worked if Steve had been looking at him. Instead, he was watching his finger
as it traced a groove on the fender of Rodney's car.
So, I was thinking, we could get together for dinner later?
Oh, no you weren't, because thinking requires a brain. Rodney was convinced the only thing beneath Steve's mop of hair was more hair.
I'm sorry, he began, which was one of those stupid rote responses that tended to get him into trouble.
He wasn't sorry at all.
He didn't want to let Steve down gently. In fact, this was the perfect opportunity to deploy Zelenka's firm fuck-off. He wasn't fast enough. Steve looked up at him. He was taller than Rodney. How was that even possible? And Rodney swallowed down everything he'd been about to say. The expression Steve wore was hopeful. So hopeful. Like he wasn't aware, he was tottering on the brink of disillusionment. And Rodney, finding himself burdened with previously undiscovered reserves of decency, couldn't quite push him over the edge. Instead, he explained, stumbling.
I can't. I have company back at the house.
Company?
Oh.
Steve's shoulders wilted. Then a fresh spark of interest caught behind his eyes.
Oh!
No. It's just an old friend.
Now he was trying to reassure Steve. How dumb was that?
They just dropped in unexpectedly, and, we have a lot of catching up to do. So much has happened since we last saw each other.
Which was never.
You could bring, them too.
So now they were playing the pronoun game.
Him, Rodney stressed. And I don't think that would be a good idea. His hands wanted to fidget. He made fists and pulled them up into his cuffs. We're kinda into the same things. We'd just talk a lot of shop. The stuff we're into is really, really boring.
Wrong excuse.
Steve perked up even more.
He hunts aliens too?
No! Rodney squeaked. He turned the too high sound into nervous laughter.
God no, and you must never bring that up around him.
Rodney intended to do his best to prevent the two from ever meeting, but Steve had that lousy habit of turning up in unexpected places. He doesn't believe in aliens and doesn't approve of what I do because he's a scientist. Whenever we get together, we mainly talk about science, you know, with all the, you know, big words.
Oh.
Again. Was thoughtful, suggesting Steve's determination was intact, just waylaid by curiosity.
Some other time then, he promised absently.
Shit, what have I done? Given time, the situation might have still be salvageable, but time was the only thing Rodney didn't have, not while Shepard was alone with all of Rodney's stuff. So he agreed.
Some other time. Now, if you'll just...
He made the move the fuck out of the way motions with his hands until Steve took the hint. After that, he figured it was Steve's problem if Steve was still standing behind the car when Rodney cranked the engine and dropped into reverse and shot out of the parking space. Good news was, Shepard was in the control room when Rodney returned. The bad news was, he wasn't on the couch where Rodney had left him. The even worse news was that he'd changed clothes, redecorated, if moving luggage from the front hallway counted, and helped himself to Rodney's beer. Rodney dropped the grocery bags he'd been carrying and glowered. At least, he would have glowered if Shepard hadn't chose that moment to stand and greet him, and incidentally, rekindle Rodney's love affair with BDUs. Shepard's zip-up, long-sleeved shirt wasn't regulation, but the trousers, oh,
Those trousers. Rodney had a couple similar pairs stashed in the bottom of a drawer somewhere. A guilty, little affinity he'd taken from his stint with the Air Force. It was impossible to argue with the convenience of thigh pockets that could hold a cordless screwdriver, a pair of wire strippers on one side, and two cans of soda and a power bar on the other. However, he was certain his has never hung, or clung, quite the way Shepard's did, molding across muscles as he moved. The fabric looked faded and soft from too many washings. Rodney got the message. Both messages. The one that said, "I'm the hottest piece of ass you'll never touch," might have been unintentional. The one that troubled Rodney was the one that warned, "I can do casual, but never mistake me for a civilian." "Help you with those?" Shepard inquired, pointing at the groceries with his beer. Of the sundry replies Rodney had at his disposal, perhaps the one he least expected to hear from himself fire back was, "I have glasses, you know." "It's okay. I don't mind drinking from the bottle." To demonstrate, Shepard lifted it to his lips and took a swallow. Somehow it was balanced by the neck in the crook of his thumb and forefinger. Rodney averted his eyes and scrambled to retrieve the bags. "There's more in the car," he grumbled, retreating to the kitchen. That was a tactical error. The kitchen was small, and small translated to intimate once it was crammed full of two men and a couple dozen grocery bags. Shepard had tried to help put things away until Rodney, in desperation, threw a package of frozen peas at his head and told him to go sit at the table, out of the way, since he didn't know where anything went anyway. Shepard obeyed and kept himself entertained by dragging his finger through the condensation ring his bottle left on the tabletop while Rodney assembled a late lunch. "Why are you even here?" Rodney demanded over his half-finished turkey sandwich. They had scrounged up a second chair, a stool, really, and the height advantage was all Shepard's as he glanced over from the crumbs on his plate and said, "I told you already. I'm on medical leave until my ribs pass muster. Figured I could take an opportunity to come and thank you personally for everything you did." "And since you've been such a good boy, the Air Force just gave you a helicopter when you announced your intention to leave the country." Rodney dropped into the combative verbal give and take he and Shepard had shared over the radio, and it won him back some of his equilibrium. Shepard made a "what can you do" face. They kind of insisted. "Okay, that's the official story. Now I want you to come clean with the unofficial one." "Unofficially, I'm grounded until the puddle jumper is repaired. The best estimates on when that will be are appalling. The day after I went down, two project members, one on base and one from Area 51, just didn't show up for work. The assumption is that there are sabotagers. The suspicion is that they weren't working alone, and that their disappearance was supposed to throw us off the scent of their associates, who are still sitting pretty undercover." Right beneath the Air Force's nose. "Where they can make another try at you." "That's a concern, yes," Shepard told him frankly. "I'm in the interesting position of being too valuable to risk in the open, but too risky for a temporary reassignment. On paper, I'm the man who doesn't exist." His smirk was perhaps too fierce, as if self-depreciating humor was his antidote for the loss of identity. "So they gave you a helicopter and told you to get lost?" That was pretty shitty once he thought about it. Exactly. They told me to get lost, but take a chopper in case they needed to call me back to base in a hurry. Commercial airlines aren't fast enough, he elaborated. And that is, you're just here for the duration? Rodney craved an explanation that was reasonable and complete, and this one came so, so close. Shepard somehow shrugged, using just his eyebrows. Couldn't think of a better plan, so yeah. The brass knows where I am, but no one else does. There's no possibility I was followed. This place is as safe as any I could be right now. You're just going to leave the helicopter parked in my front yard. Why not? It's not like the bears are going to steal my hubcaps, Rodney. Irritatingly good point. And this whole... Rodney waved his hand back and forth between them. I mean, I already knew way more about this shit than I am supposed to. You haven't tried to arrest me or shoot me, and you would have by now if it was on the agenda. He swallowed, because his curiosity was fucking killing him. Had been non-stop since the first time Shepard's voice had cracked at him out of the audio archives. And Shepard had promised to answer all of Rodney's questions, if they both came out of the ordeal alive, which left Rodney with a fear that John wouldn't honor that promise, and the equal fear that he would. We can talk, Shepard assured, understanding the heart of Rodney's concern, no matter how convoluted their presentation. I'm not trying to scare you, but there are certain factions that would take an unhealthy interest in you if they knew that you know what you do. Arming yourself with more information can't hurt. Yes, I get that. Rodney's voice dropped, and he leaned forward to compensate. But is it safe?
Shepard's lips tugged at the edge, like he knew a great secret, but instead of answering, he fished around in one of those huge, marvelous pockets and withdrew a PDA. He put it on the table and pushed it with his fingertips the short distance over to Rodney. It wasn't a model, Rodney knew. Not surprising, given that the tech was big and clunky, and probably a decade or two out of date. Broken, too. When Rodney tapped the buttons, the screen stayed dark. Okay, explain. He crossed his arms. Shepard had scored a direct hit, baiting his curiosity like that, but Rodney sure as hell wasn't going to advertise how effective that tactic was. When Shepard touched the device again, it powered up obediently. He stretched his hand back, leaving the thing near Rodney's elbow. I scanned your house for bugs. You scanned my electric surveillance, you mean? While you were at the store. You're clean, by the way. Rodney was only half paying attention to the device's screen, which displayed an operating system, and hell, a language he didn't know. Did you plant any? No. Well, that's good to know. It's a shame I can't be sure you're telling the... Oh my God! Rodney's instinct was to recoil. Funny how his hands missed the memo and were dragging the device, the fucking alien device, up to his face for closer inspection. The alphabet is the same as on the ship's control crystals. What the hell is this thing? On the screen, a couple of dots remained stationary inside a wireframe structure that looked suspiciously like the floor of his house. One dot trailed Shepard when he went to the fridge for a second beer. Life signs detector, they call it. I know, dumb name. It's more like an everything detector. I'm not supposed to have it, but I thought I might need it. Besides, they can't even use it without me to turn it on. Rodney waved the detector around, then aimed it at Shepard. You stole an alien Newton. His eyes never left the blips on the screen. Borrowed. Oh, just like I borrowed the spaceship's blueprints off that server? Shepard teased. I thought you preferred liberated. Whatever. Get your ass over here and show me how to calibrate this thing. I am dying to take it for a spin. It was a bribe, plain and simple. Rodney couldn't have cared less. While it would have been fascinating to learn how the tech worked, he gathered that disassembling the everything detector into its component parts did not fall under Shepard's blanket. I think you've got the basics. Have at it. So he devised a battery non-evasive tests to determine the detector's range, sensitivities, and limitations. The range was pretty good, not all the way to town, but he had picked up a humanoid size or larger blip roaming about 4 kilometers from his house. The or larger part had been troubling. Sensitivity was excellent, though he also could have done without knowledge that insect and arachnoid's residence at Ches McKay outnumbered humans at a ratio of approximately 13 to 1. An impromptu game of hide-and-seek had confirmed that the detector read through both drywall and cylinder block. Rodney's bemoaning the lack of lead-lined closet to perform what he dubbed the kryptonite test had led Shepard to point out that only the device needed to be shielded. After setting up a video camera to record the results, they sifted through some of the old equipment left from the building's cable television heyday, looking for anything solid, metal, and thick. The detector read through 6mm alloy of undetermined composition topped by industrial beige lead-based paint, too. That finding had led to a discussion concerning the potential for lead-based paint to thwart Superman's X-ray vision. And that was how Rodney had found himself curled on the couch with Shepard and a stack of old comic books, and absolutely no comprehension of the steps he'd taken to get there. The strangest thing was, it wasn't awkward at all, until he thought about it. Then he nearly jumped out of his skin the next time Shepard's knee bumped into his. He was on his feet before the conscious decision to move had been finalized. The awkwardness spread. Shepard looked startled, and Rodney pretended not to notice the way his right hand groped where a gun holster might normally rest. Something wrong? No, nothing wrong. Except replace nothing with everything. Rodney made soothing, stay-seated gestures. Just what? Just finally noticed how far he'd let down his guard? Just recalled how long it had been since that couch had seen any amorous action? Don't make excuses. You can't lie to save yourself. Deflect! I just realized how late it was. How does supper sound? Shepard rose anyway, stretched. One of those luxurious stretches with his arms clasped far above his head and his back arched. Rodney's eyes slammed shut when the hem of John's shirt lifted enough to bare a sliver of skin. They jostled open again when John nudged him. Sounds great. I'm going to need something in my stomach if I'm going to keep drinking. Rodney followed him into the kitchen where, good to his word, Shepard snagged another beer.
Rodney had lost count somewhere around 4. The man was far from drunk, but he was also maintaining a steady, almost methodical pace. "Should you be drinking?" He wanted to add so much, except that it wasn't. Not really. It only seemed that way when Rodney started thinking in terms of quantity rather than rate of consumption. Absolutely. He protected his hand with the cuff of his sleeve, then twisted off the cap. It might cause interactions, you know, with whatever painkillers you're taking. Bottle rose to lips, paused. I'm not on painkillers. I don't fly doped if I can help it, and my ribs aren't more than a nuisance these days. He drank and then added, and a nice cold six-pack was one of the things I promised myself if I ever made it out of the woods. This is the first opportunity I've had to indulge myself, and I'm taking advantage of it. Oh. Rodney's mouth formed the shape, if not the sound. Want one? I don't drink. Shepherd waggled the evidence at him. This was in your fridge. Very well, I prefer not to drink alone. Supper was going to have to be simple. Rodney's cooking rarely rose above adequate, and never when he was distracted. He couldn't think of anything more distracting than John Shepherd leaning skew-hipped against his kitchen table. I don't count as company? He tried to pout, which should have looked ridiculous. Grown men didn't pout. Military men didn't pout. Major John F. Shepherd, USAF, should not be physically capable of doing that sulky bottom lip thing, a weapon which Rodney had surmised existed solely in the arsenal of young girls. So much for that theory. Perhaps it was a result of being off balance. The truth came easily. I have trouble drinking with company, too. See, I had this roommate in grad school, Chuck Guy. I think he was weaned straight to vodka from breast milk. It was dangerous to get drunk with him. He had twice the tolerance of anyone else and could get real creative with the permanent black marker he always kept in his shirt pocket. That was how Rodney had discovered that Zelenka actually liked him. Radek had restrained his body art to portions of Rodney's anatomy that could be hidden beneath clothing. Of course, that had given Zelenka rein to be even more vulgar than usual. And until the marks had scrubbed off a few days later, Rodney had to piss with his eyes closed. Shepherd drifted to the fridge. I promise not to draw on you. That beer was a housewarming present, Rodney balked. It's over a year old. It is a little flat, Shepherd agreed, but no worse than the stuff we got in Afghanistan. He was starting to do that, drop tantalizing hints as if to see which ones Rodney would follow and how far. It had to be deliberate, the way his gaze rested on Rodney like a question. Rodney shuffled in place, storing the information for later. I bought more at the store today. Zelenka's suggestion, God bless him. Hold out? Shepherd rolled his eyes. Even though it was possible, he'd seen Rodney unpack it that afternoon. He dumped the rest of his bottle down the sink. Instead of Afghanistan, there was something else Rodney could ask about, while Shepherd seemed amenable. What other sorts of promises did you make to yourself when you were stuck out there? Shepherd's eyes flicked in the direction of the control room. Promise I'd finish reading War and Peace. Shit, the library copy. Rodney had left it sitting out. He hadn't thought to hide it. It was sitting on the end of the table next to the couch, and there was no way Shepherd could have missed it. missed the connection. So he'd used it, and now Rodney's options were to either turn chicken shit or ante up. His chin jutted out. I have audio logs of most of your transmissions, if, you know, you were ever interested in revisiting what had to be one of the more miserable experiences of John Shepherd's life. It wasn't the offer that Shepherd paused to contemplate. Maybe. Eventually. Not today. Then slyly, you listened to them all? Yes. Tap, tap, went his finger against the empty bottle. Where did you say you were hiding the good stuff? That was how it worked after that. Shepherd answered any question Rodney asked, so long as Rodney was careful not to ask questions that began with why. Information flowed freely, sometimes too freely. Rodney had to start asking himself whether or not he really wanted the answer to a particular question before posing it to Shepherd. Reasoning, logic, and motives did not. Rodney thought about it that night, laying awake in the dark. He couldn't decide if Shepherd expected him to infer motives from everything else, or if the subject was simply off-limits. Until he understood the rules, he was exercising caution. His back twinged, already longing for his own bed. He flopped on his side, rearranging the sofa's throw pillow under his head. Shepherd had his real pillows, just like Shepherd had his bedroom, and his bed, and a fresh set of sheets, while Rodney made do with a blanket procured from the helicopter. It was green and scratchy. The antiseptic smell that clung to it should have been disconcerting, but Rodney's brain had given it some sort of irrational connection to John, so it didn't trouble him. That was the most disconcerting thing of all. Was Shepherd having trouble falling asleep? Were the strange surroundings bothering him? Was he anxious about sleeping in such close proximity to another person? Since the Air Force knew where Shepherd was, did that mean they knew where Rodney lived? Rodney examined those questions, then put them on the list along with the rest he preferred not knowing the answer to. There was another list. A shorter one, of questions Rodney thus far lacked the fortitude to ask. It started with, how long was Shepherd going to stay?